Campus Talk, der Podcast der FH St. Pölten. Wissen, was morgen zählt.
The future of the radio medium, as well as the further development of the podcast trend, were some of the topics that were discussed at the International Radio Days at the FH St. Pölten here. 22 students from Austria, Germany, and Liechtenstein had the opportunity to collaborate with a radio legend from Great Britain as part of the Erasmus Plus project. John Simons, who has interviewed stars like Paul McCartney or Katy Perry at the public broadcaster BBC, has worked as a program director at multiple stations and now serves as a consultant for some of the world's largest radio stations. Yes, and today we're going to talk to him about the future of audio. Welcome, John Simons.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. I've been enjoying what I've been hearing so far. I'm looking forward to finding out a lot more as the day goes on. Now, you started your radio career about 40 years ago?
A bit further back than that, actually, but 40 plus, that'll do.
Okay. What have been some of the biggest changes that you've witnessed so far during your career?
Well, you know, I started in the late 70s, and the only constant has been change. You know, if you look at British radio compared to what it is now and what it was like in the 70s, they're unrecognizable. So that's what it's all been like for the whole of my career. Cyclical changes that have gone through different formats, different styles, different music that has become fragmented. So the change has been enormous. And if you look at the radio we were doing back then compared to the radio that we're doing now, you probably think it was pretty amateurish back then, yet we had huge audiences because there wasn't that many radio channels then. Now you've got choice of so many radio channels. It's more professional, but it's much harder to get a big audience.
So you started your career in the 70s working as a presenter and DJ.
Yeah, I was a jock, as we call them. I think you would call them that as well in America.
Yeah.
I was a jock for 20 years. Didn't really want to be in management. I thought management was the antichrist and did my best to keep away from them as much as I could. But it was very different in those days. You only heard from your boss. We called them program controllers in those days. It was only later they became program directors. But you only heard from them when you'd done something wrong. So eventually then I became a program director, and I swore that wasn't the kind of program director I was going to be, that you only heard from them when something was bad or you'd done something wrong. So my philosophy was always work with the presenters, the DJs, try and help them to become better at what they're doing, and never just take away, never just say, don't do that. Always try and give them something back. So in other words, always try and help them fill up their box of tricks rather than empty the box of tricks. And that was always my philosophy.
So having worked through a couple of decades where rather exciting musical change was taking place, revolutions basically across multiple genres, what would be some of your highlights from your time as a jock?
Well, you know, the thing about living through a period of incredible creativity and a huge musical change is that when you're in the middle of it, playing all those songs every day on the radio, you don't know that you're going through that. You only look back and think, oh my goodness, the 80s was an incredible decade. And I wasn't on the air in the 60s, but the 60s was an incredible decade as well. You only just have to look at the Beatles and compare the Beatles in 1962 to the Beatles in 1969 and what a dynamic, creative change that was. And similarly, in the 80s, we went through all sorts of different, like went through New Romantics, the tail end of punk rock, hip-hop was just coming in, R&B was still very big, especially in the UK. They were really great days. The 90s, not so much. We had Britpop, and that was about it. But then I think the noughties, I think we look back, possibly these kids who are around us today are looking back at the noughties. A bit harder for us older guys to look at the noughties and think, oh yeah, that was a great decade. So I think the thing about it is you only realise what a great period of musical history it was to be part of after the event.
We're currently living in a period of change, especially when it comes down to radio production and distribution. Digitization now has forced the industry basically to go through some massive changes as things have developed. What do you feel is different for presenters today compared to, let's say, the 80s?
I don't think there's any difference. The only presenters who connect with their audience are the ones who've got strong personalities, they've got something to say, and they've got a degree of warmth as well. I think the one big difference was, and particularly this was in the 90s, we went through a very negative phase in presentation in the 90s, where it was de rigueur to take the mick out of things, look at the negative side of things, and knock things down. And I think that's completely changed now. I think it's now very much about being positive on the air and trying to give a, especially after the couple of years we had with COVID, trying to give people a sense of hope and trying to encourage them that there are better things to come.
And another change that's been taking part as part of the digitization process has been the very slow, surprisingly slow rise of podcasts, a technology that's been around for quite a while, but didn't really start to get super popular until, about the last 7 years, I guess, it started to really take more of a role.
Absolutely. And if you look at the last 7 years, it's really taken off. And not only from a listenership point of view, but also from a profitability point of view. There was a lot of great podcasts around. I mean, Ricky Gervais was doing a great podcast back in the noughties and wasn't making a bean out of it. But now he can make big money out of podcasts. And it was interesting. I was doing a workshop with some of these youngsters earlier today. And I said, how many of you want to work in radio? And, you know, a few hands went up. And how many do you want to work in audio? A few went up. How many of you listen to podcasts? Every hand went up. So they're consuming it, but there's an uncertainty about how you participate in it, which is an age-old problem. When I was a kid, I never thought I'd ever get on the radio. You never think that you've got what it takes until you try. So again, be positive. Be positive about your own abilities and keep on trying.
And what's your gut feeling as far as podcasts? Are they going to be good or bad for radio?
I think they go hand in glove with radio. I think we get hung up on terminology. I talked earlier on about, with the kids, about some research done by iHeart in America about the word radio. And most 15 to 24-year-olds thought it was a kitchen appliance. And they didn't really register it was something that you could use to listen to a radio station on, even though it's called a radio. But they all knew how to access radio on their smartphone or their smart speaker. And smart speakers have just replaced the clock radio. Most people in the UK, in the US, in Europe now, they've got more than one smart speaker. It's not just in the kitchen. They've probably got one in the bedroom. They've probably got one in the lounge as well. And so smart speakers are a part of that revolution. And, you know, one of the things we are really good at in radio is reinventing. You know, radio's been around. This year is the 100th anniversary of the BBC. It's been around for 100 years and in different guises and still going strong. And that's one of the things that it's very, very strong at, looking at itself and saying, we need to change. We need to do some of this differently if we're going to continue to prosper in the present day environment.
Now, later on this evening, you're going to be giving a presentation called The Future of Audio. So would you care to share with us just a little bit, perhaps a peek of what you envision for the future of audio?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is, right, if I knew what the future of radio or audio was, I wouldn't be sat here. I would be on an island somewhere on a beach because I'd be loaded. So this is my take on what I think the future of radio could be. Nobody knows what it's really going to be. If anyone tells you they know what it's going to be, they're lying because you don't know. You could guess, and this is my best guess, at the direction of travel of how we're going to adapt and improvise and consolidate.
Okay, now I have to get down to some sort of inside dirt type stuff. I mean, you've had some rather famous people across from you in the interview seat. Any particularly good stories? Maybe mishaps that I've messed up a few interviews that I was sort of like, and then there have been the other ones where I'm just like, I'm going to remember this forever.
Well, there's that stark realization that you hadn't pressed record at the beginning of the interview, which only ever happens to you once. And, you know, I can't even remember who that was. I think, thankfully, it wasn't a huge star. But it was someone significant at the time. I think it was someone like the Thompson Twins, that were a big act back in the 80s. And I had to actually go back in and say, guys, I forgot to press record. Could we do this again?
The most embarrassing moment.
Incredibly. But, you know, the lesson I learned there was always check. Right at the very beginning that you have press record. And the other lesson I learned was, if it goes wrong, and things can go wrong for all sorts of reasons, not just human error, just be honest and tell the person who you're doing the interview with, look, something's gone wrong, I've got to start again, can we just pick it up from there? So be honest, not just with the interviewee, but with the listener as well, because these things can happen in a live environment. Like we are right now.
And what about really famous people like Paul McCartney? What was it like meeting him?
I've met Paul a few times. And I actually got on much better with his wife, Linda. And I'll tell you how that came about. I was doing a radio show. I was doing the mid-morning show on a BBC local station in Nottingham called Radio Nottingham. And Linda came out around on a tour promoting her book of photography. And I'm a vegetarian. And she's, the McCartneys are all vegetarians as well. And so we got, after the interview, we got talking about vegetarianism. And it was just before she launched her line of vegetarian food into the supermarkets. And so about 3 months after that conversation, I got a call in the office and someone said, it's Linda McCartney on the phone for you. And I said, get out of here. It was Linda McCartney. And she said, hi, John, I'm just about to launch this line of vegetarian food products, and I haven't got the time to go around all the radio stations promoting it. Mm-hmm. Would you come down to the mill, which is Paul's studio, and we'll record an interview and we'll send it out to all the radio stations? And so my wife and I, they paid all the expenses. We went down and stayed in Hastings, went to the mill. At the time, Paul was recording the oratorio, his first thing that he ever did in classical music, because, you know, he doesn't read music. He was recording that with some classical musicians. So I walk into the mill to see Linda, and Paul calls me into the studio and said, John, come and have a listen to this. And it was classical. And I said, hey, man, I know nothing about classical music. You know, it sounds great to me, but what the hell do I know? And then we did the interview. And then she said, send me your bill and everything. I sent her a bill. It was about £100 in them days, you know. And I got a check back for £100 signed by Linda McCartney. So I never cashed it. I kept it. And so, and when we went there, my wife got on really well with Linda. And mm-hmm. so actually mm-hmm. my wife and Linda mm-hmm. were much closer friends than ever I was with Paul. And then they invited us to Wembley to one of the gigs and we were backstage. And so, yeah, when I met famous people, I would always get a little bit nervous. I met Kirk Douglas, you know, Michael Douglas's father. Kirk Douglas, he was in a lot of movies in the golden age in the 1950s and 1960s. And I was really nervous meeting him because he was a big-time movie star.
And finally, one last question, specifically directed toward the two or three students who raised their hand and said they'd think about working in radio. What tips would you give them to send them on their way?
Believe in yourself. Have that self-belief that will get you to where you want to be. Because I had rejections for 2-3 years before I got anywhere near a radio studio. And I was ready for quitting. And I just happened to bump into a well-known, famous English DJ. He was actually Australian, but worked in the UK for many years, called Alan Freeman. He was always called Fluff, because he apparently in his early days used to fluff his lines. But everyone called him Fluff. And I bumped into him on the railway station on my way to the steelworks where I used to work during the day. And he gave me so much encouragement because I was ready to throw in the towel and say, oh, this is not going to happen. And that was his words to me. Do you believe in yourself? And then he said, how old are you? I said, I'm 21, I think I was at the time. He said, I didn't get into radio till I was 28. He said, so you got another 7 years to go before you give in. Thank you. Very welcome. And thank you for having me. And sure enough, he spurred me on. And the next demo tape got me across the studio door.
John Simons, thank you very much for your wisdom, your insight, and sharing those stories with us.
Thank you. Very welcome. And thank you for having me.